So good to see everybody. Give us all a minute. Right. Welcome, everyone. It's so good to see you. I hope that you're doing well. We're going to be looking at getting off the wheel of self-sabotage today. But before we do, I am wondering if anyone worked on their even though neverthelesses this week. Imperfectly. And if so, I'd love to hear some reflections on it from you. What'd you see? What'd you notice? Lori.
I didn't do a lot, but we had a snowstorm in Northern California. So we lost power, we lost internet and cell service, we had trees down, we're stranded. And it was very tempting to go into the, oh, this really sucks. But even though we don't have a lot of conveniences, this is beautiful. It's a treat. We don't see this ever. And so finding the joy in it rather than the inconvenience. And so that was helpful, really helpful. And then being able to help my young adult kids to see it that way as well, because they were definitely take internet away from 20 somethings. Not a pretty sight.
Okay. I'm just marveling at how you get a young adult to see anything, but that's a story for a different time. But I love that you were able to apply this tool to like what was going, you know, it feels like beautiful timing. And this idea of like, yes, there are no conveniences. You're not pretending that that's not true. You're honoring and acknowledging that and the frustration of that. And also, this is so beautiful. And let me take this in and be in awe of it. Beautiful. Thank you. Wendy.
So I didn't write very many down, but I took your challenge invitation to heart on Facebook. And I feel like I can't stop thinking about it, but in a really good way. Even though I am not everybody's cup of tea, nevertheless, everything, literally, nevertheless, everything is possible. Nevertheless, I can be successful. Nevertheless, I have gifts and wisdom and knowledge to share. Nevertheless, I have the ability to help someone that wants to be assisted by me. It just keeps going. And it's almost been a little therapeutic.
Yeah, it really can be, absolutely. Because I mean, I got chills when you said your first one, because what I heard was not a pretending, like maybe one day you can be somebody's cup of tea, you know, everybody's cup of, you are some people's cup of, you're not pretending that one day you can be everybody's, right? And also not getting stuck in the heaviness of like, and the fear of I'm not everybody's cup of tea, but instead owning this truth. And the way I heard you say it, it didn't hold a, what's the word I'm looking for? Like it didn't hold a negative energy to it. It was just like statement of fact.
Yeah.
I'm not everyone. And I think that I'm not to say a week ago that would have been very, very different, but my guess is some of the work from this week helped neutralize that for you. I'm not everybody's cup of tea. And then there's so many nevertheless's, right? Like that can exist with so much possibility and opportunity and all the things at the same time.
Yeah, I think I'm going to try really hard to say this without crying, but there's no guarantees. I think the biggest one is, even though I'm not everyone's cup of tea, I'm not going to, nevertheless, I'm not going to let that stop me from being seen.
Yes. Where do you know that in your body? Where do you really know that? Yeah. You feel that?
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Really beautiful. Who else? We have time for one more share. What'd you see? What'd you notice? Julie.
Thanks. I'm kind of going to piggyback on Wendy's share a little bit with, even though I still seem to bump up against feeling misunderstood by people who are close to me and dear to me, and it can feel hurtful. Nevertheless, I recognize that I no longer need to get caught up in the story and drama that I have historically created around it, and I can stand in my own truth and knowingness about who I am.
Yes. Yes. First is true, and you can even sometimes get frustrated in it, as you said. And nevertheless, you don't have to get caught up in it. Beautiful.
And I don't need to take on what's theirs as mine.
Yes, yes, yeah. And it's like, as we focus on this, you could, I don't know if you already did this week, but I think you would pretty easily find 10 other, at least, neverthelesses that are so important to see and know and have awareness on, right? And then doing a little bit of teaching now as I'm responding to you, and then we get to mix and match our tools. Then you have some new beliefs to go into a rewiring technique with, if you want, and rewire those, embody those more, right? Yeah. Really, really well done. Thank you. Anything that anybody wants to say, less like personal, although always open for personal shares, but more like practitioner point of view, what you're seeing about this process, or anything around myth of perfection. Remember, this is, we kind of learned it under the context of this myth of perfection, black or white thinking. Practitioner point of view. Yeah, Kim.
I did the dialoguing with the perfectionist, and I got that the perfectionist is misaligned inspiration. And I really like that.
Yeah. What do you like about it?
Like, just seeing like the positive side of perfectionism, but that it's like perfectionist has a distorted view of things, and they have good intentions, but it's, yeah, just not. So I like just the refinement.
Yeah. Yeah, I love it too, because then if you can remember this when you go into the perfectionism, then you can say, okay, what in this is inspired?
Mm-hmm.
And what in this is misaligned? Mm-hmm. And you can start to kind of tease out those pieces for yourself and then make choices without throwing out the inspiration.
Yeah.
Nice. Great. Okay. Well, if you didn't do inner perfectionist or even though nevertheless this week, remember life isn't perfect and you get many more chances. So you can just do it this week if you want to. Okay, so with all that, we're going to step into looking at self-sabotage. And first thing I want to say is I know some of you came to some of the, I was doing a free workshop over the last month or two on some of the concepts that we're going to look at today. So if you happened to be at that workshop, we are definitely, you're going to be hearing things again, but don't tune out. Use this as an opportunity to go deeper, to embody more, to integrate more, to find the nuances and the details. And then there's certain pieces that we're going to go into differently and much more deeply today than I was doing in the public workshop. To once we get to the, after I lay out the wheel, like how to handle it, we're going to get into a couple of different places. So we're still in our kind of part two of Sacred Depths, where I'm giving you, you know, whether we're looking at fear or rewiring or resistance or myth of perfection, I'm giving you lots of different tools that you can apply and mix and match when clients come up against obstacles. I want to give you different angles, different ways of understanding obstacles and stuck places. So you have different things to choose from, whatever feels most appropriate in the moment when you're working with clients. And also so that it's not just like one thing that after a while, it's like you're using just befriend your fear every time, it can kind of get a little stale. So it's like a combination of having lots of tools that feel exciting for you and for your client. And then of course, because we're always coaching the what based on the who, you get these kind of different entry points in depending on the who in front of you. Lisa's saying, will you lay out recommendations of what technique to use when? I don't want to answer that question in two ways. The first answer is no, because you can, they're so malleable and you can use each one can be, there's so many different situations too, and each one can be applied in different ways. So not exhaustively, but the answer, there's a couple answers behind that, because you know I don't ever want to just give you a no on something. So the one is we kind of already have been learning this. The difference between a resistance where you don't have the green light to look at a fear or a belief versus when you do have, right? So if you don't have the green light, you want to use the resistance archetypes. If it feels like more of a fear versus a cognitive belief, you might want to use BYF versus rewiring. If you're seeing that there's hints of perfection in the fear or the belief, you can bring some of the perfection pieces in. So we kind of have been learning that. And then if you have any, at any point, like a specific question about a case study, or if this comes up, what should we do versus that, you know, I'll always answer and brainstorm with you on it. So I can't give you a definitive, exhaustive yes, but hopefully that's helpful. And actually, that's great segue into what I wanted to share next, which is that our brains, my brain wants to do this. I think many of our brains want to do this. We really want to try to compartmentalize and put everything into like really nice categories. When this happens, do this. When that happens, do that. Like we wanted, like, I want this for all of you to like to tie it up into a neat bow, or just like, Joanna, just tell me exactly what to do, right? But after 20 years of coaching and working with human beings, I can tell you that compartmentalizing is just a myth of perfection. So better to embrace the messiness. There's crossover in all of the tools, you know, better to embrace the understanding that there are hundreds of different client scenarios and client moods and, you know, backgrounds, and that there's always more than one tool that you can use to move forward. So I'm giving you lots of different things to draw on. Honestly, if a client is showing up in resistance, but in the moment you're like, oh, I don't remember the resistance thing, but you remember the rewiring things, you'll be able to start poking holes and making headways, or you'll end up with some kind of combo of two things. The other piece with all of this that's important to share, you all know this, but I want to really underscore it. Never go in to a client session, even after you've read, if they've filled out their pre-call form and you know what's up for them, never go in with a hard expectation on what tool you're going to use. You might get an idea of what tool you think you want to use when you read a pre-call form that very well in the end may end up being the tool that you decide to use because it feels like coaching the what based on the who and aligned in that moment. But the first couple minutes of a session, you, even with the pre-call form, you want to really be listening for where a client is at, right? Using all of your listening skills, and then see what is the right tool to use in this session on this day. Okay. One more thing before we jump in that I wanted to mention, and again, I think you all know this, but it's important just to keep on sharing. So we understand this for ourselves and also as practitioners. And this is related to the breakthrough versus the transformation. Even when we have a breakthrough and then we work consistently to a transformation, and there is real change and real shift and really being in a different place than where we were, I wish that I could tell you that I have found that then that change is permanent all the time, forever. But I haven't found that to be the case yet. Not for myself and not for my clients. The point is not to eliminate self-sabotage forever or eliminate perfectionism forever or eliminate this old belief or not good enoughness forever and ever. I mean, that would be so nice, you know, in an ideal world. But as humans, we're in flow and we're in flux and we kind of backtrack sometimes, not all the way back to where we started, right? But there's a flux that happens, right? So even for me, for example, and I've worked so much on this and I teach this like around my not good enough parts and also the everybody hates me. I am firmly in a different place with all of it. And I will also tell you, Art of Client Transformation is coming up this week and there's going to be a lot of people there and a lot of strangers there. And there's pressure for me because I also want to fill sacred depths. And I have noticed the last few days, all of the old, right, like fears and a little dysregulated coming up. And I've come back to my practices and I'm working on that. So this isn't like one day it's done. The point is different. And I think there's two points to it. Number one, to work with the obstacle enough to be able to take the next steps or the next series of action steps. This relates to the wheel that we'll look at today. But to know that we're going to need tune-ups and maintenance on the inner work. And then, you know, and like I say, everything I say isn't the truth with a capital T. Try it on to see if this lands for you. The other point is to live a more meaningful life, a layered life, a deep life, if you will, one where we know ourselves really well. I personally don't think of the definition of a good life means that we're consistently happy, we're like never in our fear, we're only productive. For me, a good life is I know myself well, and I'm always finding the meaning and the layers and the sacredness and deepening my relationship to all the parts of me and the world. Does that make sense? Anything that anyone wants to say on any of these pieces that I'm mentioning, they're big umbrella pieces to all the work that we do. Anything wants to be said? Julie.
I'll make this quick. I feel like what you're describing is just about kind of like the fluidity and elasticity of our human experience that we all share. And it's so easy and so common for us to just get caught up in the spin cycle of our minds. And it's important to remember what you're talking about for ourselves as well as for our clients. And I feel like what you're also essentially suggesting is that, you know, because we can't and therefore shouldn't expect that when we see breakthroughs and then transformations and real change, that those changes and the impacts of those changes are going to last and stick forever because of this elasticity, and that ultimately the function of the coaching container could be said to just be an invitation to experience compassion for self and other, and to just keep returning and returning and returning. And that's really like how I endeavor to move through life in general and meet people and clients. And I'll just end with, I just before class today finished listening to this really lovely podcast episode. It's the 10% Happier podcast, if any of you are familiar, and wasn't directly related to what you're talking about, but it was about judgment and discernment and really sort of the same idea of like how to return to just really being kind and loving and nurturing and gentle with ourselves and just being like, hey, what's going on? Or what do you need in this moment? Or what's working or not working? So,
anyway. Yes. Yeah. So beautifully said. Big yes to all of that. And I really do believe that one of our many jobs as Sacred Depths practitioners is to support our clients to build that internal muscle that you were just talking about, of the more compassion for ourselves and the appreciation of that human condition and the flux. Good. Kelly.
Hi. I love this so much, Joanna, and I love, Julie, what you just shared. And I'm definitely, I had similar thoughts, so I'm riffing off a little bit of what you're saying. But one thing that I was feeling into is just how important it is to remember our own humanity and our clients' own humanity in this. And just, I think it's so easy in the world of transformation and coaching to be like, yes, go in, rah, 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 and fix it, and it's done. And it's such a masculine way, and it doesn't feel very true. And for me, you know, hearing this again in the second round, it feels like an exhale. It's like, oh yeah, we're not supposed to be that. Like, it's actually okay. This is our humanity, and it's helping to remember humanity of ourselves and our clients as well. And then the other thing that it makes me think of is in my shamanic practice, we like do this work of kind of going around the wheel. We go around the medicine wheel, and then it's like the work, the way I see it, I don't even know if I was taught this, but the way that I see it is like we go around the wheel and we do this again. And the going around the wheel could be just going through cycles or touching into perfectionism again and again and again. But it's like you go just deeper and deeper towards center. And it feels like it's just spiraling inward. And maybe as we spiral, we like release more of the external stuff on the outer spirals. But it's just like taking us deeper into the place where we know our own wholeness and humanity and meet with compassion, as Julie was talking about. So yeah. I love that.
Yeah. Yes. Big yes to all of that. And the cycles, like winter will always come. And if we are staying present and doing the work, we know how to move through it differently each cycle. And I love how you say, and it just helps us come more and more to our center each time. Beautiful. So with all of that as our backdrop, let's talk about self-sabotage. So for the sake of what we're going to be looking at today, I'm going to define self-sabotage in a very particular way, which is as follows. When your client consciously or unconsciously gets in the way of achieving their own goals and desired evolution. When your client consciously or unconsciously gets in the way of achieving their own goals and desired evolution. I'll just pop that in the chat. So you all know my Virgo likes to put things into categories. Although, as I said before, we can't totally compartmentalize things, but I like to put things into categories or buckets. It oftentimes helps me understand things better. And so there are two kind of buckets of self-sabotage that I want us to consider. The first I like to call single occurrence or explicit self-sabotage. Single occurrence or explicit self-sabotage. This is the kind of sabotage that is more easily recognizable because it kind of, maybe you didn't realize it in the moment, but when you look back or when a client is sharing it with you, it kind of sticks out as a sore thumb. Of like, oh yeah, that was getting consciously or unconsciously getting in the way of achieving something. So some examples of this single occurrence or explicit, I'll tell the very abbreviated story. I always like to tell the story of the time when I was invited to a closed meeting with Bono from U2 to help him brainstorm for his not-for-profit. An old boyfriend invited me. It was amazing. This was 20 years ago. I was so excited. And then the morning of the meeting, I decided that nobody really wanted me in this meeting anyway, and I wasn't smart enough, and I wasn't creative enough, and who was I to be there? And I just decided not to show up for a meeting with Bono. Single occurrence that never happened again. explicit, right? We can look at it and almost anyone can be like, that was you getting in your own way. But it doesn't have to be as dramatic as that to be single occurrence or explicit. Maybe you have a really important meeting, like a big meeting, and somehow you show up late for that meeting. Or somebody's got a really important test and they decide to stay out really late the night before instead of studying or getting rest for that test. Or maybe you don't want to get pregnant, but you didn't use birth control. Showing up on the wrong day for an appointment. This is one for me, although it's kind of hasn't just happened once, but I'll put it in this category. You wait until the last moment to think about what you're going to wear for a big event or presentation. And then all of a sudden you don't have stockings or anything to wear in your closet and you have to be there in 30 minutes. So that's single occurrence or explicit. Davis saying, ouch, I feel that I was invited to play with the Monterey Symphony and froze up and didn't respond to their email for 4 days. And then ultimately they said it wasn't going to work out. I'm so sorry. And yes, that is such a good example of this kind of explicit self-sabotage that I'm talking about. So take a moment. What are one or two examples that are coming to mind for you, where you've engaged in this kind of single occurrence or explicit self-sabotage? And please share in the chat. It's good to get lots of different examples. Anyone want to share? Maybe you're typing. Michelle is saying most of mine are on heavy repeat. We're getting to those next. You're not alone. Okay. So let's talk about the other bucket then. These I call patterned and subtle. This kind of self-sabotage is a sneakier because it doesn't immediately present. As self-sabotage, usually there are some very good excuses. So let me give you, and the excuses are because they're patterned, they happen a lot. And so we can't see them right away unless we know to look. So for example, maybe you consistently stay up too late. And then because of that, you consistently don't have enough energy during the day to do the things that you want to do, right? Subtle doesn't like, oh my gosh, you're self-sabotaging because you're staying up too late. Different than the have a test the next day and you stay out till 4 in the morning. It's like, you're staying up a little bit too late every night. And that's creating this consistent, not enough energy. Or maybe for you, this is one that I fall, saying raise his hand. I this next one can fall into, maybe you know this one for yourself, this example. You consistently overschedule yourself. And then you consistently don't have enough space for the things that you are important, but you keep on putting off, or you feel like you don't have enough bandwidth for those things. Maybe here's another example. This is another one from my personal life. I've gotten much better at this one. Maybe there's a food that you know you're kind of sensitive to. Like one of them for me is quinoa. And even though you know it doesn't do well in your system, you eat it and then you don't feel well. Maybe you consistently don't prepare before sales conversations. And then they just don't go very well. But you're showing up for them. It looks like you're doing what you need to do. And then it's like, oh, I'm just not good at sales conversations. But really, it's self-sabotage. You're not preparing for them beforehand. Angie's saying all of these have my name written all over them. All right, so I'll give everybody an opportunity to kind of write out what are some examples for you of the second kind, this patterned and subtle. What are some other examples? And please share in the chat. Again, it's great to get different examples of things. Heather's saying, if I don't have a deadline, then it won't make it to my to-do list. That's a good one. Right, it's so subtle because Heather can say, but I'm doing so many things. I'm getting my to-do list done every day, but maybe not putting an important thing on the to-do list just because it doesn't have a deadline. Angie's saying waiting until the last minute to do things and then stressing out and not being able to fulfill other obligations because I procrastinated. Yep. Dave is saying not naming my prices on my website. And then every time someone asks for my rates, I feel like a deer in the headlights and run into my worthiness. Yeah, these are such good examples. Anita saying not doing articulation exercises, even though I want to improve my public speaking skills, right? In the moment, such a good excuse. I'm busy. I don't have the time today. I'll do it tomorrow. But then when that's patterned, it's a subtle way of standing in your own way. Michelle is saying, I don't really do this anymore, but needing the house or office to be clean or perfect before sitting down to work. This feels like resistance that could fit here too, for sure. And that goes to our point earlier, where if that came up for a client, you could look at it from the resistance lens and from the wheel of self-sabotage lens. Okay, here's another question. Let's focus specifically on one of the patterned and subtle for you. What is the root of the self-sabotaging behavior? So, in other words, if you stay up late consistently and then don't have enough energy during the day, what is the unhelpful belief or the fear that's driving the staying up late? What are you telling yourself at 10 or 11, whatever is late for you, that you're like, I can stay up a little longer? So what's at the root of the behavior in that patterned self-sabotage? What's the fear or the belief? All right, let's pause here. We have time for a share or two. What are you seeing so far that feels important? Kelsey.
I just need to out myself right now. It's been a week of loving up on my little perfectionist, but holy moly, it's been intense. My coaching buddy really helped me out this weekend. But I'm noticing even in this moment, like that most of my patterned and subtle sabotage-y stuff is rooted in this hyper-perfectionism, like really and truly. And so even in this conversation, it's like a dissociation. It's like, I get so overwhelmed with getting it right, figuring it out, that the whole brain just kind of, my vision goes blurry, everything just, yeah. And it's been really confronting this past week and really frustrating. And so, and like everywhere, I'm just noticing how, you know, and I am I also, you know, I'm on a healing journey with complex PTSD and know that like the freeze response is really strong in my system. So I know that that has a lot to do with it. But even after doing a lot of nervous system work for years at this point, just really feeling a bit tired.
Yeah.
Of this cycle.
Yeah. I'm so glad you're sharing, and doesn't feel like an outing of yourself so much as like an important share, and just want to also acknowledge the frustration with it. It sounds like in so many ways you have been working on it, and I know you've made progress, and also it's like the messiness of being human. And tell me if I'm getting this right. It feels like with this perfectionist work that, and I just want to honor you for committing to that perfectionist work, even though it hasn't been fun. It sounds to me like you're seeing, even if it's just like a little bit, seeing some of the same things you've always seen, but you're seeing it with a little bit of a different spin this way and a little bit of a different spin that way. I want to remind you of the value of that, like bringing this new awareness to the work that you've done on your nervous system. I know it's not fun and it's so annoying in the moment, but that awareness can help you in the moment find the here and now versus the there and then, right? Because bringing yourself back to the here and now will help with some of that freeze response or disconnected feeling, and to be like, oh, wait, that's because then and there I needed to be perfect in order to survive. But actually, I don't need that as a coping strategy in this moment. And then maybe you can ask yourself, what are the resources that I have right now that let me know that I'm going to be okay when I don't get this perfect, right? Not if I don't get this perfect, when I don't get this perfect.
Yeah.
How does that land for you as a next step from everything that you've been doing so far, which has been amazing?
Yeah, no, it feels really helpful. And this feels like a moment in time where the different programs that I'm in, everything, like I was working with Lilith and Medusa the other week, you know, like just total. And it was the week before we had our class. And it was like, okay, I have got these two archetypes just at my back, ready to burn some shit to the ground. And I don't know. There's a new fire like in the belly. And I came across a great book that I'm listening to that has helped as well. And it's called Break the Good Girl or the Good Girl Myth or something. And it has I was just listening to the chapter on the myth of perfection in that. So if anybody wants to check that out, it's been really helpful. But yes, like this coming back to the here and now. For sure. And this idea too of like small little steps. It's a doozy. Thank you.
It is. And I'm so glad you're continuing to commit to it. It really feels like progress is happening. Angie.
Yeah. I relate to a lot of what you guys just did. So that's like kind of making me feel some things right now. But what was coming up for me as we were going through, like, what is my belief or like, what is it that's prompting this behavior? There's a couple of things that are even surprising me. So I think part of it is, you know, this whole notion of like being busy and the need to stay busy. And what does that mean or say about you? Because if you're busy, then you're important and you're needed and all of this. And so procrastination will continue to make you feel like you are busy and important and needed. And I think that is feeding in some ways to perfectionism and feeling important and valued and valuable. And then on a more personal note, I think I'm recognizing too, the staying up late thing has been really applying to me lately and it's really impacting me. And I think that if I'm just being really honest, it's hard to, I'm moving through a divorce and it's been a while, but it's hard to go to bed and be lonely at night. And so if I stay up, then I can avoid that feeling as late as possible. And then maybe by the time my head hits the pillow, I don't have to think about the fact that it's by myself. I think that I'm recognizing them, but I'm doing a fair bit of this in my life.
Yeah. So first of all, the recognition is so important. And then especially with the second piece, I mean, with both, but I just want to hone in on that one. My hope is that the seeing what the root belief is there or the root fear is there can help give you compassion for yourself as you work through this, right? Because it would be a lie to be like, okay, now you see it, Angie. And so now that you know, you're just going to start going to bed early, right? But that's not true. Like there's, right? Like pieces around that loneliness and that fear that going to be worked through, but you can then have compassion for the staying up late and compassion for yourself when you're feeling tired the next day, in knowing that yes, you're working to change it, but that was you taking care of yourself in the evening.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, let's keep on going with this. So whether it is the single occurrence and explicit, or whether it's the patterned, so with the patterned, we can see that it happens in a cycle. But even if it's the explicit, if we take a perspective on it, we can even see that the explicit happens in a cycle as well. So I'm going to share my screen. Hold on a second. Let me get set up here. Can y'all see that? So call this the wheel of self-sabotage. And this is often how the self-sabotage works. Starts off up top here with an unhelpful thought or belief or a fear or a kind of resistance. We've looked at that over the last couple of minutes. And then the negative or unhelpful thought or belief or fear yields, it inspires in a self-sabotaging action, whether it's the explicit or whether it's the subtle. We take that self-sabotaging action, and almost always the result, every now and again, the result of the action gives us what we want, but really, like most of the time, there is a consequence to that self-sabotaging action where things end up how we don't want them. And the result of that action gives us evidence that the original thought, belief, fear, resistance is true. And so then it strengthens that original thought, belief, or resistance. I believe this more now, or I need to be even more scared of it because I see this just happened. That leads to the next self-sabotaging action. That leads to more evidence on the fears and the beliefs. That leads to strengthening them. That leads to the next one. And then on and on and on it goes. So, in essence, when we're on the wheel, it doesn't naturally allow for a positive outcome to happen. And it ensures, in a way, that we're going to stay in self-sabotage mode unless we break the wheel. So as an example, let's say you start off originally with a belief that's not so helpful, like it's hard for me to date. And because you believe that it's hard for you to date, maybe the action that that inspires is that you don't put a profile on a dating app. And then because you don't have a profile on a dating app, maybe the result is you don't get asked out on any dates. You don't get asked out on any dates. And so that reinforces the original belief of it's hard for me to date. And you believe that maybe even more. And then maybe you get set up on a blind date. But because now you're believing even more that it's hard for you to date, maybe you act like a total weirdo on that date. And the result of that is that you don't get asked out on another date, which then reinforces even more this belief that it's hard for you to date. And then maybe the next time you get set up, you don't even go on the date. Being on the wheel of self-sabotage is really tough because it is a cycle that produces evidence that isn't real, but masquerades as such. It produces evidence that isn't real, but masquerades as real. It's kind of like a downward spiral that cycles in and on itself. versus that other spiral that Kelly was talking about before, when we are aware and working on our things. It's like the exact opposite of that. So how does this wheel play out for you? Take a moment right now, and you can even just draw it out. How are you on the wheel right now with something? Play it through like 2 or 3 times. Take one more moment with that. And then here's another question. What thoughts or fears have evolved for you simply because of being on the wheel? So how has the wheel maybe created some new fears or unhelpful belief that weren't even there in the first place? As an example, back to the Bono thing. I never before that situation felt like I was irresponsible with professional things. But because of that, and thankfully I kind of caught myself pretty soon thereafter before that one took root really deeply. But for a month or two there, that one was starting to take root, right? I'm irresponsible professionally. All right, let's pause here for a moment. Anything that wants to be said or spoken, or what's kind of coming together for you around this wheel? What are you seeing, personal or practitioner, that feels important here for you? wants to share? I'd love to hear a voice on this. And Anita's putting a great example of her wheel in the chat. Anyone want to share? What are you seeing? What's feeling important? What are you noticing? Kelly. Oh, you're on mute.
All right. Sorry. I was saying I was raising my hand because nobody else was, and I kept hearing, just raise your hand. mine isn't totally thought through, but I feel like it's around my newsletter, and it's definitely this place of feeling so much like I have this thing to put out there, but getting stuck on like, what is my message? What are the things that I want to share? Even though I have like 40 unsent newsletters written, and I just write and write, and then my perfectionist steps in and like, oh, is that aligned with your message? What is your message? You haven't really developed your message. and I've got this whole spin going, and I'll sit down and I block time, and I'm so disciplined about doing it. And even I might be totally squirrely through a 3-hour session, but I'll sit down and do it. And yeah. And I'm just realizing it's like, I don't even know that I have the clarity on like the beliefs are, but it's definitely this, you're not really clear. You're somewhere between activist and like healer and coach. And it doesn't make sense. And so better not to put it out there.
Yeah.
And I just keep kind of spinning. It feels like
I'm so glad you're seeing this. Good. And then let's just play this for one moment. Complete the sentence for me. Uh-huh. Even if I send a newsletter out that doesn't nail my messaging, nevertheless,
I know it touches someone out there.
And why is that important?
We need to close the door. It was a snow day today. Commentary from Peanut Gallery here. why is that important? That's important because the stirring inside me that like leads me to write the things I write are all about feeling like it's contributing to healing on the planet in some way. And that's what I care about.
Yes. Yes. What would be different next time you go to send out a newsletter if you could remember that?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Beautiful. Thank you for sharing. Right. And I also did that just to show everyone how we can combine the tools. We can support our client to become aware of one of the cycles they're on and then bring in if it's around a belief and it has to do with perfection and even though nevertheless. Deva.
Hi. Yeah, I totally relate to that squirrely energy. I feel like I'm kind of on this wheel of saying I want to be more organized and then creating all these little messes around me. And then I've signed up for classes and programs. And then when it's time to take the class, then I kind of am multitasking, cleaning up my little messes everywhere. And then I'm like, now I have to rewatch the class when I can be fully present. And or it's like this wheel of, well, I still don't know enough, so I need to take more classes because maybe I didn't get the full value out of the class. Or like, you know, I did a whole business class for a year with Monica Shaw, and it's like, but I'm still not a good business person. And, you know, so it's kind of this, like, I'm not fully showing up for what I'm investing in. And I'm, you know, creating all these little distractions and reasons why I'm not worthy of showing up for them. There's a lot of layers in there, but I can really see kind of my own ADD or nervousness around like really letting myself shine, I think is what's at the root of it. And like being like, I'm a grown-ass woman and I'm a professional. and I can show up in that way. So
yeah, I'm so glad you're seeing all of that. And I can even hear in like how you're kind of what you're saying towards the end here, that just being able to see that pattern, some of those different higher wisdom pieces are starting to drop in around it. Good. Thank you. Okay. So the next question is then, okay, now that we kind of understand how this works, how can we support clients to get off the wheel? And first, I just want to say, like a side note, this doesn't necessarily always prevent clients from getting on the wheel, but it can help. When I'm working with a client, we looked at this in our visioning, and I just want to remind you of it. When I'm working with a client and we are working on their next vision, what it is that they want to create next, et cetera, et cetera, and we're looking at some action steps, I will often also at that time ask my client, what is the belief that you want to be holding as you work towards this? And I do this, as I'm sure you can all see, as a way of just starting to replace at the root, whatever that unhelpful belief is, that they're just going to kind of, without realizing it, go into the working on the goal towards. Sometimes that can help to just start to set that foundation, right? What's the belief that you want to be holding as you work towards this? What is the fear that you know is going to come up? And what is it that you want to remember about that fear, even now, right? Before it comes up, and have that be kind of a guiding light for them. That doesn't mean that it won't still come up and you do work on it, but to already create awareness and like set the trajectory onto the more helpful beliefs to begin with. That makes sense? Okay. So in order to move out of self-sabotage, if a client were on this wheel, is we want to break the wheel. We want to break the pattern of the wheel. And we want to break it on two levels. We want to break it on the inner level, the fear, the unhelpful belief, et cetera. And we also want to break it on the action level. We're going to get into all of that in a minute. But before we do, it's important to look at this first, which is to say that especially on the action level, well, okay, let's take a step back. So we want to break on the inner and the outer. You have so many tools for breaking on the inner level already. Resistance archetypes, befriend your fear, rewiring, even though nevertheless, inner perfectionists, right? You have tools to help the client identify that inner piece that wants to be broken and to start to work on it. Especially when breaking the outer pattern, breaking pattern at the action level is usually uncomfortable. Doesn't matter how much of the inner work that you do, to take a different action is almost always at the beginning still going to be uncomfortable. And maybe not even only at the beginning. Like Kelly knows, because I asked her if she would be a testimonial for Art of Client Transformation. Thank you, Kelly. I have done this 4 times now, and it is still so uncomfortable for me to ask and bring on a live testimonial into an event like that. Like, it brings up all my stuff. And by the way, Kelly, my energy is going to be great and it's all going to be good, right? But I'm just like, I'm sharing with this group. It's uncomfortable. It's okay when things are uncomfortable. And that's the point that I want to get to here. And remember back to our rewiring negative thought patterns. There's a difference between that pain body that we spoke about and discomfort. There's a difference between pain and discomfort. And as practitioners, we need to normalize and get really comfortable with our clients being in discomfort. And we need to support our clients to get comfortable with being in discomfort. People, one of the reasons why we have trouble with discomfort is because we usually associate discomfort with pain and conflate the two. And that's also because, like, culturally, we've been taught that we should never be uncomfortable, especially the more privileged you are, the more it's been hammered in this belief that you shouldn't be just uncomfortable. And we want to help clients make a distinction between something that's painful and something that's uncomfortable, right? Because think about anything new that you've done. Probably many of those things, you've had to go through a period of discomfort around it for a while. Is this making sense? As practitioners, if we, right, energy always follows energy. If it scares us for our client to be uncomfortable, it's going to be very hard for us to support the client to break on the outer level. So, that being said, what are some of the beliefs maybe that you hold around not being comfortable? What are some of the beliefs that you hold around not being comfortable? And just with, like, with anything else, we want to be checking our filters when we're approaching clients and working with clients. Yeah, I can't tolerate it. Anina's saying that you notice that you feel more at ease with pain, so that's within your trauma vortex, yeah, but then with discomfort, that feels anxious in your system. That's such a great awareness. Dave is saying it's not safe to be uncomfortable. I often leave my body. Mm-hmm. Michelle saying, I've had so much physical suffering the past years that I don't want to be uncomfortable and find myself shutting down. Yes. And so that is like a great moment, Michelle, to distinguish between what is pain. It sounds like the physical suffering has been pain versus discomfort. And are there places where you might be conflating the two? Jenny's saying, if I'm uncomfortable, then it must mean I'm not good at doing whatever it is I'm feeling uncomfortable about. Mm-hmm. And let me ask you all this. So again, distinguishing between pain and discomfort, because that it's an important distinction. When is a time that you've allowed yourself to be in discomfort because you were stretching towards something? When was a time, not in pain, but when was a time where you allowed yourself to be in discomfort because that was maybe required as you were stretching towards something new? Kelly.
I'm sort of sitting with this in my head, spinning a little. I think there's been this part of me that has been really comfortable being uncomfortable or maybe a little bit in pain, and that is the pattern that I seek more than the avoidance of the discomfort. And as you were saying, the time that you've allowed yourself to be in discomfort because you were stretching, I actually was thinking, I don't do stretching very well. I tend to like do leaping into places that are like way beyond comfortable. I mean, way beyond uncomfortable. And then it gets me in a spin, which is a really good way to kind of like slam yourself back to, you know, not being uncomfortable. Or that it's like the seeking of the discomfort. And I'm realizing, I was just reflecting that many of my clients do that too. And my pattern has actually been around like, let's slow it down a little. Maybe we could do some stretching rather than leaping.
I love that. I'm so glad you're seeing that. That feels like its own wheel of self-sabotage with that leaping. Yeah, yeah, good. Lisa.
So I realized that my discomfort had a lot of discomfort about doing presentations and webinars, particularly when the more people it was, the worse it was. And I would do it with my knees shaking really early doors, like really shaking. It was horrible. And then one time I thought I wasn't shaking anymore. And then I picked up this glass of water and it was shaking like that in my hand. It was terrible and everybody could see, and the water slopped everywhere. And then, so that was that. And then I was chatting with my mom and she said to me talking about something. And she said, but just do what you're comfortable with. Just do what you're comfortable. I thought, wow, this is like you're saying, the family pattern of go for what's comfortable. I thought in my mind, Mom, if I'd only ever done what was comfortable, I wouldn't even have a business, to be honest.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. Yeah.
And how deep these patterns go too.
Yes. Yeah. I'm so glad you're sharing it. It's so true.
And I feel shaky now sharing it. That's really weird, isn't it?
It's a big deal. You know, it's a big deal. And again, we don't want to do things that are going to like utterly dysregulate us or bring pain, but we can do things that are uncomfortable and tolerate them.
So would you differentiate that discomfort is more in the mind, whereas pain is more in the body? It just occurred to me, but I'm not sure, because both they interrelate so much as well, don't they?
Yeah, except like to what Michelle is saying, there can be physical suffering too and physical pain. So I think it's more about back to the there and then versus the here and now is one way to think about it, right? Like in the here and now, is this going to threaten my survival? Mm. Or can I endure this? We can use for ourselves or with clients, remember the stretch, risk, or die exercise that we looked at back in the, I think, the strategizing module. That's a great way to distinguish between discomfort and pain. Is this action a stretch? Is this a risk? Or is this a die? Usually if it's like, I'd rather die than do this, we're not gonna go for those actions because they're moving into that pain, but we can stretch, we can maybe even risk.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. So so those are some ways that we can help our clients start to become more comfortable with the discomfort, that stretch, risk, or die, the distinguishing and finding the resources in the current moments, supporting clients to see, like I asked you, places in their lives where they've been uncomfortable, but they didn't break because of it, normalizing discomfort during the growth process for clients. I will often say, even before a client goes to do something, if I know it's stretchy for them, I will say, my guess is that it's going to feel uncomfortable when you go to do this. So first, let's just normalize it, right? And then what do we need to talk about around this, right? So that I'm just like putting it out there that, yeah, discomfort happens and it's okay. And it doesn't mean that you're not going to do this just because you feel uncomfortable. Normalizing again, as you all know, also means like sharing what's uncomfortable for us. So all of the different examples that I've given today, like the little here and there, what makes me uncomfortable, right? To be like, yeah, but I still asked Kelly to do the testimonial. I'm still going to make a call to action at the event. I'm still doing the event, right? Like I can endure the discomfort of that. I know for me though, you know, also just back to this difference, like I couldn't do an event with 1,000 people online. That would be for me still, I'd rather die than do that because that feels like I could be attacked. I don't know, like just all the random, too many random people out there. That is me not doing that is not self-sabotage. That is actual taking care. We have 250 people registered for Art of Client Transformation. Like I'm in my like stuff with it, but I can endure that, right? So we want to honor where that pain zone is too, for ourselves and with our clients. Okay. Another way that we can support our clients to get comfortable with discomfort is to help them strengthen and focus on the parts of themselves that either have trust or have confidence or have passion or hold love. And we can almost do like a similar to a BYF process or an archetype process with the part of them that trusts what they're about to do, or that has confidence in what they're about to do, or has passion about what they're doing, or is hopeful. Sometimes we like focus on the fears and the unhelpful beliefs, but other times we can focus on and foster and strengthen the parts that are, I don't know, I want to say like the higher expression, and help those get big enough that that's what will carry a client through the discomfort. That makes sense? Okay. Couple more things I want to make sure we share before we end for today. I think, so one of them is just the role that shame plays when someone's on the wheel of self-sabotage. It's a shame machine, the wheel. The evidence, right, that gets created by the self-sabotaging action that gets taken by something that's not actually real, it can start to create shame. And then the shame can become more derailing than the original fear or unhelpful belief itself. So I just share this for you as a practitioner to know that when someone is on the wheel, it might be likely that shame has become part of the show. And we just, whenever we're holding anything with clients, we always want to make sure we're checking our filters to make sure we're not inadvertently shaming a client when they're self-sabotaging. Because then we're just kind of like piling it on more. And, you know, again, energy follows energy, right? So if we know there's nothing shameful about being on the wheel, that is going to carry a lot of weight and go a long way. So if you want to think about steps to support a client to get off the wheel, step one, create awareness that they're on the wheel, right? And that can be a little bit of consulting. So sharing what can happen. And then like I asked you to do, to have them draw it out for themselves. I mean, so much can come just from that awareness of drawing out the wheel. I like to, if there is time and space, I really like to ask a client to draw it out. The drawing it out helps it go slower. You get to like the pieces, it's activating another level of learning and processing by taking the physical action of the drawing. And it just can help create deeper awarenesses all around. Once you've created awareness, then from there, probably always coach the what based on the who, but probably the next thing is you want to start to poke holes on the inner level first, identify what that one of the root beliefs or fears are. You all know how to do this. We looked at this in Befriend Your Fear. We looked at this in Resistance. We looked at this in Rewiring. And then you pick a process. You have a couple in your toolbox to start that first breakthrough, to start to poke. Remember, we don't have to like completely have this changed for someone to take a new action. We just have to create enough of an opening on the inner that they feel inspired to take the next baby step or two on it and actually get them in an opposite wheel from the wheel of self-sabotage by taking an affirming action. After we poke a hole or two on the inner level, you might want to just create some awareness around resilience and discomfort along some of the lines that we spoke about today. And then from there, to start breaking pattern on the outer level, you want to support your client to identify a next action step that they can take that will help get them off the wheel. I like for it, usually almost always, this is going to be a baby action step when they're first getting off the wheel, something that is doable. I like to hold a little bit of a tighter container for that first action step or two off the wheel because of the discomfort and the newness. And, you know, ask them, do you want to follow up with me? Can I check in with you in a few days? What's going to be most supportive for you on this? All right. I know we're almost at 4:30. If you have to run exactly at 4:30, please just right now, write down what is it that you're taking away from today. You'll have some worksheets, and homework in your member center. If you're working with a coaching partner in your session, work a wheel, one of your partner clients' wheels, and then you can add tools into it and all of that. And then for bonus, if you want bonus homework, if you have any sales conversations coming up, see as you're talking to your prospect, if you can notice that they're on a wheel, create awareness. Don't get into the coaching of it, like what to do after creating awareness, but create awareness on the sales call. They'll be blown away. You'll have done a huge service and they'll be more poised to buy if it's an aligned person for you. Any questions or last thoughts before we wrap for today? Or share is on what you're taking. Anyone want to share? Yeah, Lisa.
Quick one. I've got a sales call tomorrow morning. How do you do that? How do you, in a sales call, it sounds like quite a big piece to me, but I might be overworking it.
I threw that in real quick at the end. So now that you have this understanding of it, as you talk to your client and you see where their gap is and what their vision is, you might start to see like a root belief or fear for them, and then how that's creating certain actions. Like, I know you're working specifically with clients on their marketing. Mm-hmm. And so you can say, I want to reflect something to you that I'm seeing, because this might be an important piece. And let me know if this resonates for you. And you don't have to name it the wheel of self-sabotage or get into the theory that we spoke about, but you can say simply, one of the things that I sense is happening for you is that it feels like there is this fear of being visible and what might happen if you're visible. And that fear of visibility is keeping you from sending your newsletters out. And then because you haven't sent your newsletters out, I'm smiling at Kelly, prospects aren't coming your way. And then because people from your email community aren't reaching out to you about your work, it's kind of reinforcing this thing of, I shouldn't really be visible because it doesn't matter, or it's scary. And then because of that, I also see you then not reaching out, whatever it is, and you can say, and it's almost like this wheel or this cycle that's spinning on itself and really holding you back from, and then you name what their vision is. Am I getting that right?
Yeah.
Right. And then they'll probably be like, yes. Right. Yes. And then when you can say, that's first, I just want you to know that's normal, right? No self-judgment. I see it because I've seen it in myself. And this is one of the things that I work on with clients. And, if we were to work together, and then you can name that as one of the pieces that the two of you would work on together to undo. But it's this right. Like really beautiful way of really giving a gift to your prospect of having them start to see their patterns. And then they're like, oh, but then what do I do next? And it's like, oh, when we work together.
Yeah. Right? Obvious, so it's
giving value and also helping you show, if we were to work together, this is one of the things we could work on.
So we're kind of identifying that root belief as we're seeing it in the conversation.
Yeah. And asking if you're getting it right. Always.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome. Good question. Something to play with if anybody wants to play with it. Only if it's appropriate, right? Don't try to make it fit if you're not seeing it, but if you're seeing it, it's a powerful thing to play with. All right. Kelsey.
Art of Client Transformation. I have two morning clients just for an hour or so. Can we hop in?
Absolutely. After? Yeah. Okay. Especially if you're Sacred Depths. Absolutely. Just come in when and as you can.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. I'm glad you'll be there. All right. I'm sending everyone a lot of love. And I'm excited for you all to work on your wheels, notice when you're in it, break patterns on the inner and the outer. And I'll see you all very soon.